are joined this afternoon by Matt Clark. Sir, welcome. Thanks for joining. How are you? You're back in Canada for a little bit, right?
Yeah, dude. I'm back at home. Can I decompress for 2 days? And I just like to say thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man. So we're going to bounce around a little bit today. We're going to talk a little bit about your career. We're going to talk a little bit about IndyCar. I don't know, whatever else comes to mind. I have your little USF 2000 bio up here. But before we do any of that, why don't we introduce you to the show? So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into racing, all that fun stuff. And what are your racing, you know, where do you want to be long term?
For sure. I like that. I like the way you frame that up. I'm 19 years old. I am like through and through Canadian, born downtown Toronto and lived in the GTA, Greater Toronto area, my whole life. I started racing when I was about 11 years old, kind of worked my way up through karts. Racing was just a hobby for me at first. And now I'm on the path to IndyCar. I'm in the USF Pro Championships competing in USF 2000 with D-Force Racing. And that's my final goal. Oh man, I want to make it to the NTT IndyCar series and I want to be a star of the future, hopefully.
I mean, I think you're off to a good start. Obviously, you know, last year in USF Juniors, in the inaugural USF Juniors year, you had 5 or 6 wins last year and a bunch of poles and
yeah,
a bunch of podiums. I know your name was in my email inbox every a lot last year when I was getting the race recaps.
That's awesome. No, that's good to hear. Yeah, we managed to win the championship last year, the inaugural USF Juniors Championship. So that gave us the scholarship this year to run USF 2000. I mean, the USF Pro Championships are such a good job with that scholarship system, like, you know, allowing talent to move up and, you know, giving support to drivers to keep moving up the ladder all the way to the IndyCar series. So I'm fortunate in that aspect for sure.
So last question, then kind of switch gears for a little bit. You got kind of hooked up with James Hinchcliffe at some point in the last couple of years. And that's actually what reminded me that I wanted to shoot you a message this week was your picture from Toronto weekend. So first off, how'd you get hooked up with James? I know you guys, you know, are pretty close now. So kind of describe that relationship.
Hinch is awesome. My go-to kind of phrase about him is, what you see on TV or on camera is 100% what you get in real life. Like, the guy is so genuine, salt of the earth. And I got connected with him probably 2 or 3 years ago now, just kind of bouncing around ideas. He's part of a team called Speed Group, and they're kind of like a management agency for drivers. So okay. I'm a part of Speed Group. And over, you know, this period of time, I've gotten closer with Hinch now. And so it's kind of like a more mentor / friend role. So he's, you know, offering me on track and off track advice. And he's just, I mean, an awesome dude all around.
I'm surprised he hasn't asked you to be on off track yet. I mean, you guys are good buddies and you haven't joined the show yet. Yeah. And when you say, do, yeah, like, you have to give
this
me
Rossi
credit.
Guy
so,
out.
Yeah, so they give so they so so they can say my name on the show again. But so we watched, you know, we had Iowa this weekend for IndyCar. What do you think, you know, as a driver, you see a short oval? I know you had was this year at Lucas Oil your first oval experience in a race car?
It was, yeah.
So you see a short oval. What do you think of that versus, you know, a super speedway, which is obviously epic for so many reasons, but a short oval is just, to me, a whole different ball game.
I love the short ovals. I like the way you phrase that, the different ball game. Like, it's completely different than a super speedway. It's oval racing. It's grassroots. It's really tough. I think a lot of people maybe in the road racing scene don't give oval guys enough credit. You know, maybe they get some flack, but oval racing is just as tough in its own kind of way. And seeing a series like IndyCar with 27 drivers at the speeds that they travel on a short oval, it makes for good racing. There was a lot of entertainment this weekend at Iowa with the doubleheader, and I definitely enjoyed it. I sat on the couch and I watched all of Saturday's race, and I caught the highlights for Sunday. So,
so what did you think? You said, so everybody who listened last week knows I was going to be away Saturday. Though I didn't listen as you and I were talking about beforehand. What did you think of the race Saturday? Obviously, Newgarden dominated. I haven't yet, as of Tuesday afternoon, watched said highlight package for that. But What did you think of the actual race?
It was action-packed. I mean, Power had a real shot at it until he brushed the wall. But Penske, super impressive. I haven't been a super big follower of like IndyCar and going back like the past 2, 3, 4 years. I'm still younger. As I'm getting into the IndyCar scene myself, I'm starting to obviously watch IndyCar more. So I've been following hardcore this year, and I haven't seen a team dominate a track like that yet. Maybe there was like flashes of Ganassi at the Speedway, but Penske 1, 2, 3 with McLaughlin, Power, and Newgarden in no specific order all weekend. Super impressive from them.
Yeah, I think that was the first time a team swept the podium. I think it was Penske was also the last time, and I'm gonna get the year wrong, but it was 2017 or 2018 Sonoma, or 2016, 2017 Sonoma, when Sonoma was still on the IndyCar calendar. And the only reason I remember what race it was Pagenaud did a four stopper and everybody else did three stops, and he just drove away from everybody at the end. It was a good race if you're looking for an old race to go back and check out. But
That's
so
sick.
Sunday we had something interesting in the last 10 laps. There's a late caution after Hunter Ray brushed the wall. And instead of, the normal, okay, we're going to open the pits, we're going to let people put on tires, and we're going to get maybe a lap, they just decided, hey, we're going to close the pits and you guys are going to keep it green, get going green again quicker, which apparently, like I have to say, was discussed during the drivers' meeting. I don't know if it was before Saturday or before Sunday, but we're getting into kind of an interesting gray area here of we saw what happened at the end of the 500. We saw what happened at the end of Iowa. Obviously, very different circumstances, but similar circumstances. So as a driver, how do you feel about different, the way the 500 ended versus the way Iowa Sunday ended?
And Joseph Newgarden capitalizing on both, right?
Seriously.
I kind of have to put my driver hat on here and just like kind of disregard my opinion as like a spectator, because like from a spectating standpoint, it is awesome. Like the fact that they shake it up and get the cars back racing, you want to have those action-packed last few laps. That part of it's epic. But from a driving standpoint, I mean, it kind of depends what situation you're in. Like I could definitely see, if I was one of the guys who maybe stopped 5 laps earlier, then I obviously wouldn't be happy, right? Because going into that like three, I think it was a 3 lap shootout, right? I don't have the best rubber underneath me. But if I'm one of the guys who stopped last, then I am pumped because I now have an advantage over the field. So it kind of depends what day it is, whether it's cloudy or sunny, and whether I'm happy about that decision or not, if I'm in the cockpit. But I think it definitely makes for some great racing. And I mean, we're talking about it right now, so whatever IndyCar is doing is
It
working.
worked, right? And I think the big thing, and this was kind of playing out in the podcast Twitter group we have, was, should they open the pits for lead lap cars only? Because at the point there were five cars left on the lead lap. My thinking was, at least after the fact, was you either open the pits for everybody or you don't open the pits at all. Like there's you I still don't think it's fair for cars, especially cars 6 through 10 in the top 10, to not be able to change their tires. Because if you're in 10th, you need a lap down, like, okay, sure, but you could still want to try to finish, 6th, 7th, 8th, or 9th. Like, you still want to try to move up. So I guess it was the fairest option to keep racing going because there wasn't, a lot of repair or anything like that. And
I
so
like
we
what you
haven't.
said about that though. Like I feel like if you're gonna have like a pits closer, pits open situation, it has to be 100% one way or 100% the other. Because, what if there was 5 laps left in the race and we pit all the cars on the lead lap, they put on, fresh alternates, and then they're lapping cars at a super high speed, and maybe it gets a little bit dangerous, right? Because you have guys that are like seconds off the pace on old tires, and I mean that's just as bad. So I think, what you said about having it one way or the other is definitely important too.
I didn't even think about it from a safety standpoint. That makes a lot of sense. But I think next up on the IndyCar calendar is Nashville. You guys don't race there, right? It's only Indy
I wish
Lights.
we did, man. It would be so
Yeah.
cool. Yeah, it's only the next step.
So sorry, I'm old. I still call it Indy Lights. This is a long habit to
Okay.
break.
But here's the thing. It was called Indy Lights for since the beginning of time. So
Yeah.
it is a little bit tough. And some people don't recognize what you're talking about when you say Indy next, right?
Yeah. And like I remember a couple of years ago, I think when the podcast started, it was still the middle tier was still Pro Mazda. And then the year after that, it went to Indy Pro 2000. It took me 2 or 3 summers to get that right. And so, everybody listening who still hears me call it Indy Lights, like if they work for Indy Lights or for IndyCar, it's going to be a couple of years before I get that one
Just let them know. Just
consistently.
send a disclaimer out there.
Listen, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. It is what it is. But so Nashville is super challenging, but it's also the last year of this layout because the football stadium down there being built is going to give us a whole new or somewhat new city layout. Is that almost, in your case, kind of a bummer that you don't get to try at least the current layout? Or you're just like, listen, at some point in the next couple of years, I'll be in Nashville in Indy Next or Indy Lights or whatever they call it in a couple of years, and it's going to be badass.
I think definitely that second one. Moving up the ladder is the goal, and I am so pumped to keep moving up. And we're trying really hard on the back end of our program to keep pushing me up the ladder. And being with the IndyCar scene even this year in USF 2000 is super special. Like to have
Yeah.
the fans in the grandstands and the whole environment, like it just kind of amps you up. It gets you ready for what's coming. So I feel privileged in that aspect. And I mean, the USF Pro Championships does a really good job with that. But like full transparency, I had no idea that Nashville layout was changing. So is that like the Tennessee Titans are building a new stadium? Is that what it is?
Yeah,
Okay.
I'm about 98% sure it's like definitely changing. I think also the schedule. Next year we'll have Nashville as the finale, which is pretty cool and will get me back going to Nashville because going in, the early August, end of July, first off, it's like 9,000 degrees there. The current layout, which I don't, have you been to the track for either of the races in the last couple of years, Nashville weekend?
I have not, but I've studied onboards and
Okay.
it's pretty sick, dude.
It's wild, but from a fan perspective, it's a nightmare to walk around that track because it's like
I imagine.
it's a good like so for me, like walking from pit lane down to the media center is in the basement of the football stadium, which is kind of cool because you're down by where the locker rooms are, so you're at the base of the stadium. You can look out and see all the seats, and it's pretty cool, but it's a half
That
hour
is cool.
walk. It's a half hour walk. There's no
Ooh.
windows down there. You're just watching on TV if you're in there. So it's like you feel disconnected, as kind of cool as being in a football stadium is, but also the half hour walk, like I'm sorry,
Not
like
nice.
it's if you're going outside to say hi to somebody or watch whatever's on track, like you have to commit. I always feel like you have to commit to a couple hours outside because it's not worth going a half hour walk to go outside for like 5 laps of like the jumpy trucks race or whatever. I forget the super truck race. Anyway,
That's awesome.
I'm looking at your website bio here, and this says I
Oh,
made
geez.
penne alla vodka once. So is cooking not yet a strong suit at age 19?
It's like the new generation, right? Like we kind of suck at like home ec skills. Like I don't know why they did away with that in high school. I should have done home ec, but so I'm actually in my new place right now on campus. So
Yeah.
I have a stove. I didn't have a stove last year. I have a stove now. So
That's
cooking is, I'm determined
unfortunate.
to make it my strong suit by the end of the year,
Okay.
Mike. It's gonna be good. We're on
We're
an
gonna have to
uphill
check
trend.
in.
I
Yeah.
don't think my cooking game is terrible, but I wouldn't rate it. And like on a scale from 1 to 10, 5.
Okay, that's fair. We'll check in maybe like after the holidays at the end of the year so we can see, how much they've
Yes.
improved on that scale. But to be
I'm
fair,
gonna
I
send you
didn't.
pictures. Every
Yeah.
nice meal that I make, I'm sending
Yeah.
you pictures from now
Yeah, and they need to be like
on.
Instagram worthy. You know, like you have to
oh,
have the
yeah, like
plating,
40-year-old
right?
mom like posting on Facebook, that type thing. Yep, 100%. I got you.
I mean, if it makes you feel better, like I really didn't learn to cook until I was like 28. And now I'm pretty good at it. Like I'm a good cook. I say like a solid like
Yeah.
7.5 or 8 out of 10. You know, I'm not perfect,
So
but
you've got confidence in your cooking game.
oh yeah. Yeah, 100%. That
So
is
like, what's your
something
best dish? What's your favorite?
I feel like I'm on a dating app right now because that's literally what just asked of me on my date this weekend.
No way.
So I have a whole list, like an iPhone, like notes in the notes app that is just like recipes. Like if I make it and I like it, it gets saved in there. But
Yeah.
anything Italian like that I cook, like it's coming out good.
I got
So,
you. No, that makes sense. I'm a big fan of Italian food too. So I can respect that. That's game, man. That's game.
yeah. I mean, but it is a prompt on my dating app is like I'm a damn good cook and like I know I'm good. I might embellish it a little bit because like you have to on there, but yeah. Okay,
Course.
my next question. You grew up in Toronto, but you're a Buffalo. I guess Buffalo Bill. You're a Buffalo Bills fan because that's the closest pro football team, right?
Yes. So, like in a nutshell, honestly, it wasn't even proximity. It was I was getting into football and I had family in Atlanta and I liked Josh Allen. And I'm like, wow, Atlanta sucks. I don't want to watch a Matt Ryan that's about to retire and then be sad. And then I watched Buffalo and I'm like, yo, like Josh Allen's him. I love the Bills now. So, I mean, I've been on the train for like what, 2, 3 years now. So I'm full, like hardcore in Bills Mafia.
That's fair. I have a friend from college that, you know, we're still good friends who is a Red Wings fan, and he picked the Red Wings as a child because his favorite color was red. And I've known him now for, I don't know, 15 plus years at this point, and I still can't get over that. Like, it still annoys me that he picked a team based on like not even a player, not Steve
Color?
Yzerman or, you know, Chris Osgood or anybody. It was my
No.
favorite color is red. It still annoys me.
Or the bandwagon people too. Like I have a couple buddies and we all like gotten hardcore into the football over the course like
Yeah.
of the past 2, 3 years. And like, you know, we start watching this guy's like, oh, I like the Chiefs. Like, oh, shocker, you like the Chiefs. I wonder why. Because they're winning.
Yep.
Like,
Yep.
bro, come on. Or like all the people that like, you know. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase have resurrected the franchise that is the Cincinnati Bengals, and now all these Bengals fans are like coming out of the freaking wall, like they're everywhere. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
The bandwagons make me a little angry, but I mean, you could call me a bandwagon for liking Josh Allen and the Bills, but I mean, I'm gonna stick to my guns. I'm a big football guy, and it's I love it. I need to go see a game this year for sure.
Do the Eagles play the Bills this year?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.
Do you know that off the top of
That
your
is a
head?
good
I don't
question.
think
I do
so.
not know. I was looking at the Cincinnati Buffalo game because the tickets are cheaper in Ohio, slightly. than Buffalo because Bills Mafia is crazy. So,
is it hard to get tickets up there for a Bills game, like a home game?
It's not hard. You just have to have like a deep pocketbook. Like I'm in college. You know what I mean? Like
I get it, man.
I'm not trying to blow my life savings on two Buffalo Bills tickets. But hey, if I can work a little extra hard this summer, make some money coaching, which I am, and make it down to Ohio, Cincinnati, drive down there for a day or two, it'll be fun.
Okay, that's fair. Maple Leafs fan? Are you a hockey fan? Like, is everybody? I know there are.
Yes.
We have Canadian listeners who are not hockey fans. I won't out them because I don't want to get them in trouble with their country, but Maple Leafs fan.
I was going to say that the CIA or our version, CSIS, might come after them.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be good. But no, most people are hockey fans up here. I'm a Maple Leafs guy. Some people will clown me for that. It's okay. It happens. You know, everyone has that team that they choose that, you know, maybe doesn't work out the best. But I actually took a break from hockey for 2 years there a while back, because after that loss to the Canadians, that really bad I stopped watching for a bit, but now I'm back on the train.
I listen, as a Flyers fan, I have no room to talk first off right now. Second, I understand. Like I actually said this on my date and I was like, listen, I know it's going to be bad. I'm very realistic that they're going to suck for like 3 more years probably, but at least now they have a direction of suck. Like it's not like the old general manager is gone, you know? So it's like, now it's like, I see a direction. I'm like, okay, I can support again.
You can see like the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Yeah. You know, things are going to go up from here. Nice.
It's like real far in the distance still, but it's the light is there,
but it's there.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Good to hear for the Flyers.
So this IndyCar season as a whole, I'm sure you've obviously been at a bunch of races when USF has raced there, but have you gotten to talk to a bunch of drivers, A and B, you know, is there one driver that's given you maybe some kind of, other than Hinch, you know, given you some wisdom or some insight into, you know, something on track or even off track that you've kind of has stuck with you this year?
It's kind of like conversations here and there. I don't know any of the guys super well besides Inch. It is cool this year being around them, though. I would say the one conversation that I had that I will remember is I actually got to meet Christian Lundgaard. I talked to him for a little while.
Sure.
And he's a nice guy. And him being so fresh out of like junior formula, I think made it easy for me to relate to him. So, you know, we had some conversations and, you know, I'm not going to share any of my secrets on air, but no, definitely a nice dude. And it is cool to have those conversations because it gives you, I don't want to sound like corny, but it's almost like inspiration, right? Like those guys have been in your shoes and they've made it now, they're a professional race car driver. It is motivating. Yes. Very good. Very good use there of the word. But no, being around those guys, it's cool. Even if you just get a word in, or you know, in the press conference room, you're laughing and joking, say something funny, and they laugh. It's like, that's, you know, as a little kid in me kind of comes out, and I'm like, man, that's actually sick. So
cool. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Lundgaard. So listeners of the show, longtime listeners of the show, know when he did his first race at Indy in 2021, like when he came, like right when he came over. I asked him in the media bullpen, I said, you know, what's the difference between an F2 car? Yeah. F2 car and an Indy car. Now that you've had, you know, a couple practice sessions and a test, et cetera. And he was like, well, you know, they both have four wheels and an engine. And that is literally his nickname on the show, is four wheels and an engine. And it has stuck with me at first. I was like, oh, that was kind of a lousy answer. Like, I'm kind of annoyed. And then like, I've talked to him obviously more than once now, and yeah, he's a nice kid, and I'm really just glad he won so he could get rid of that awful mustache.
Oh, the mustache was so bad. It was an awful look. I'm with you on that one. I'm happy you won in Toronto.
So after Nashville, there's Gateway, there's another IMS race, and there's the West Coast races. You'll be at your last race of the year is what, Portland? Portland is the finale for you guys?
Yes, Portland is the only one left for us. So Portland's our season finale. It's the only one left. It's a triple header. So we'll be there. We'll be punching hard. We had our pace was good in Toronto. There was a lot of potential there, but you know, with two laps to go in both races, sitting P2, the end of Lakeshore Boulevard's not very kind to you sometimes. So, you know, through no fault of our own, you know, a bit rough in terms of results, but we're still looking to claw at that P2 in the championship. P1's a bit far gone, to be honest, from a realistic standpoint, but I definitely want P2 in the championship my rookie year.
So at what point in your season do you start looking at, you know, 2024? Like, when do conversations for what you're going to do next year, when do they start? You don't have to tell us specifics and who you've talked to.
Of course.
And anything important like that.
No, silly season, as I call it, it seems like it's starting earlier and earlier these days.
Every year.
Everyone wants you signed before fall testing, before the Chris Griffiths. Teams are very hungry to sign drivers. So, and the USF Pro Championships is still my goal. Obviously, it doesn't look like we're going to win the scholarship this year, which was our goal at the start of the season. Sure. So, you know, getting to Indy Pro, sorry, USF Pro 2000 next year.
There you go.
It's the goal. It looks challenging. We're looking for support always, long-term partners. My dad is, you know, truly my hero, like on and off the track. Not only did he teach me how to drive, but the man works so hard for, you know, what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go. So we're trying to do our part off track and see if we can make it happen. But we definitely want to stay in the USF Pro Championship system.
How do you feel about Portland, you know, as a, you know, triple header to end the season? Did you race there last year for USF Juniors, or is this your first time there?
So Juniors didn't go there last year, but there was a car available within my team, and I raced USF 2000 and actually won on my
debut weekend. That's right.
So I'm a fan of that place. And the thing about Portland is that turn one, you know, it's never boring. So a lot can happen over the course of a triple header race weekend. And, you know, I want to be the guy that, you know, takes advantage of any chaos that may ensue.
It's always chaotic there, but, you know, it being one of your strong tracks, at least since you won there last year, you know, the car, you know, the track at this point, does that give you a little bit more of a good feeling, especially after kind of Toronto, you know, even though it wasn't your fault, didn't end how you wanted it to? You kind of get over that a little bit quicker.
Yeah, looking forward. I mean, you have to, and I actually talked, this is like the corny, but like true life kind of side of racing, like as a driver.
Yeah.
I talked a lot with Hinch about it after the weekend. And like, to not have a result when it was so possible in front of your home crowd sucks. Like, yeah, over the course of the weekend, we probably had like 200 or 300 people at the track. I hadn't raced at home in like 3 years. And, you know, all our partners and sponsors were there, and they were still super happy, right? Because we were running up front, we're dicing it up. And I mean, I have all of them behind me, and, you know, that still feels good, but I like to be my biggest critic, and to not have an actual trophy to hold up at the end of the weekend, it really hurt. You know, and I wasn't feeling too hot, but I talked a lot with Hinch, and, you know, what he said and what I will share is that it's okay to be disappointed for like 1 or 2 or 3 days, you know?
Right.
But you have to get back on the horse 100%, like everyone does, right? You got to move on. You got to start hitting the gym again and making sure that you're ready for Portland, because it's your job as a racing driver. You'll always have good days. You'll always have bad days. And hopefully, you know, we have a lot more good days in my career than bad days.
I love it. So one non-racing question, actually, yeah, maybe two. I didn't write any of these down as per usual. So I'm looking at your bio here. We actually have a Pit Lane Parlay driver Spotify playlist that gets added to every driver. I will send you the link later today, but add a song. It can be something you like right now. Just yesterday, Kyle Larson added some country song that I personally have never heard of. Actually, the last couple have all been country, but there is EDM, there is metal, there is popular stuff, there is stuff I've never heard of. But
it's wild. It's like it's a super big variety.
It is all over the place. Cool. What would you like to add?
It's a great idea. Ooh. Okay. You're putting me on the spot. Can I look? Can I have like 15 seconds? I'm big into Jack Harlow right now, and I don't know how that's going to go over with the fan base. I'm hardcore debating between Morgan Wallen and Jack Harlow. I feel like Morgan Wallen's a pretty basic answer. But I'm going to go with No Enhancers off the new Jack Harlow album, Jackman. That's all I'm gonna lock that in. He's been steady in my rotation. Album, you said? Yeah, on Jackman.
Yep, got it.
Actually, it might have got taken off the album.
What's the song called again?
You got it. No Enhancers.
Oh no, I got it. I got it right here. Okay. Sweet. Yeah. Great. There's a song called Sunset Lover by Petite Biscuit on this playlist. It's like the weirdest song I've ever heard. And I don't remember who added it. Like, I think that might have been pre-COVID. So like my memory pre-COVID at this point is like totally gone, but it is definitely one of the strangest songs I've ever heard. Okay, added on there. All right, let's wrap it up with one more. I think at this point, like, we can pretty confidently say Alex Palou is winning the IndyCar Championship this year. Agree or disagree?
Agree. I mean, okay. Penske is not going to have another dominant performance like that. I don't think they're going to be able to slow down Palou. He's too good. Even with, you know, a car that was, you know, did not deserve to finish third on Sunday. The guy finished there. He's literally like the second coming of Scott Dixon, just younger and right now better. But I think, you know, they're very similar. The environment in that team, the structure must be extremely good. I know Chip's kind of, you know, some people say he's a tough guy to work with, but whatever they're doing is working because he's incredible.
Let me ask this, and this we'll wrap it up at this point. So Palou likely going to McLaren next year. Marcus Ericsson might be going elsewhere next year. Obviously, Scott Dixon's not going anywhere. If you're Alex Palou, like, would you like not want to leave Ganassi because you have a shot to win every race, the 500, the championship? You know, you're in arguably probably the most consistent IndyCar team right now. At least the last like 2 years, like, I think they've kind of taken over that. You know, because every once in a while, Penske has a weekend where you're like, oof, that is just not Penske. You know, obviously not. Not as much this year, but like that was definitely a theme last year. So if you were Alex Palou, would you maybe go like, hey, I think I want to stay, you know, can we work something out? Which has, you know, been rumored, but you never know if rumors are true. What would you do?
Right now, if I was in his shoes, I'd definitely want to stay. Looking at it from a selfish, you know, driver's perspective, I don't want to go to McLaren because the performance of the car doesn't seem as consistent. Pato is always driving the wheels off that thing. I don't want to have to compete with him because I don't want to be either 1A or 1B to Pato. It's going to be very close the whole time. He's really good. I feel like Palou's in a position now at Ganassi where, you know, Scott Dixon is there, but realistically, when he retires, like in the near future, because the guy's still at the top of his game, but he's getting older, right? It's like the Tom Brady. Like, how long can he be elite for? In my opinion, you know, maybe it's 2-3 more years and he just runs the 500 every year. But I like where Palou is. I'm sure he likes the situation he's in from like the car perspective, maybe not the environment. Because, you know, there was that big thing in the media last year with, you know, McLaren and Ganassi fighting over him. And I thought that was really good for the sport. But long story short, I would not want to leave if I was Palou for numerous reasons. But.
All right, as we wrap up here, where can people find you online? You know, if there is a potential sponsor listening, where should they go? Give us the full plug and we'll wrap it up.
I love that. You're hyping me up, Mike. Matt Clark. I'm _ Matt Clark on literally every social channel except Facebook, where I'm just Matt Clark Racing. So you can find me pretty easy. My website is mattclarkracing.com. That's a little bit more formal. There's lots of stuff on there. We keep it updated. All the podcasts that I do, such as this, that'll be going up there, as well as like blogs and driver bios. So, yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, best of luck the rest of this year. We'll have you on again. It's been a lot of fun. And toodles.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.